Hello and welcome to This Week at Charlestown Road, a branch of the Heaven Bound podcast. My name is Jason Harden. I'm here with Roger Schaus, and this is where we reflect on the weekend that was. We dig a little deeper into a recent sermon to give you something to think about as this week unfolds, but also preview what's to come this next weekend at Charlestown Road. We appreciate you joining us. We might sound just slightly different in today's episode. Roger, over the course of the last year, challenges have come and gone, and just when we think maybe there's some smooth sailing ahead, another challenge rises up, but it's good to be recording with you remotely, at least today.
We can still do this. It's not the best, but here we are. And
here we are.
You know, that's the way life is. Sometimes among the smooth sailing, there's rapids and rocks and sometimes we got to deal with them. And so
that's
here we
right.
are. So this past week, you had a great lesson about, as we continue our series on Rise and Build, about going back to the book of Ephesians. We've been there quite a bit in this series, talking about what God builds. And we focused upon building a holy temple. And we based it on the book of Ephesians in chapter 2. Where there says, having been built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Christ Jesus himself being the cornerstone. That was an earlier lesson right there. In whom the whole building being fitted together is growing into a holy temple in the Lord. And he took us back to what it would have been like to have been in Ephesus in the days where Paul wrote this and how they had temples there. And so I thought it'd be good for us just kind of go back and revisit some of those things and talk about this idea that we are built into the holy temple of God. And so you want to go back and recapture any of the thoughts of that lesson?
Sure, I can hit the high points. I appreciate the introduction. I went back to Ephesians 2 early in the year just because of that idea of the mention of Jesus being the cornerstone. But the more that I looked at that context and those surrounding verses, there are just such rich phrases there that are so relevant for what we are doing as a church family in 2021. I tried to emphasize that it's one thing to be energized about, okay, there's been some tough times, we're going to rise up, we're going to start building again, but who is it up to what we are going to build? Just because we have time and opportunity and resources and a bunch of enthusiasm doesn't mean that we've got everything that we need. There have been plenty of examples throughout history of people who have had time and resources and opportunity and have built things that aren't necessarily pleasing to the Lord. And so Ephesians 2:21 seems to be very relevant in this whole idea that, yes, God is joining us together. God is the one who's providing this opportunity. Christ is the cornerstone. The apostles and prophets are the foundation. But what are we supposed to be building? And in the language of that verse, it is a holy temple. And as I thought about that last week in preparation, I always try and take into account who this original audience was. And of course, that was people living in the city of Ephesus, and you talk about the seven ancient wonders of the world. One of them was the great temple of Artemis. They're right smack dab in the middle of Ephesus. And so it's one thing for us in 2021 to read Ephesians 2 and hear about being built into a holy temple in the Lord. But I'll just speak for me. My only real knowledge of the temple is the temple that we read about in the Bible. You know, I can go back and I can look historically and read about various temples, but from the standpoint of the Bible, there was the temple in Jerusalem. And we just kind of take that as a given as Bible students, but these people, they weren't just studying what it would have been like to live in a city with a temple. Ephesus was full of them, and they knew, well, not all temples are holy, and God is calling us to be different. He's calling us to construct a different temple, and this temple is truly unique because we are the stones. We're not talking about building, you know, a competing building to match or outshine the temple of Artemis. We, disciples of Jesus, are the stones of that temple, and we are to be the priests. There's not a special class of Christian that is the priestly class, and then you've got everybody else. No, we are the holy priesthood, and we are to offer these spiritual sacrifices. By our very manner of life, we're to proclaim the excellencies of God. And so we tried in that sermon to frame it as what it would have been like to hear that as the original audience, but to show that this is still our work all the way in this part of the world, in Southern Indiana in 2021. This is still what God is seeking to build in and through us.
So a Jewish mindset and a Gentile mindset, the word temple has two different pictures.
It does.
For the Jew, he would have thought about Moses and then all the way through when Solomon built that first temple, place of holy sacrifice for God. For the Gentile, which the book of Ephesians is written to, they had temples about like we have McDonald's everywhere.
They did.
And you pick the God of your choice and you go there. And so for those people, that word temple, it was redefining what that meant. And it wasn't like, okay, we're building another franchise on the other side of the block here. This is a totally different one. And so what would be some of the differences between the Gentile temple and what Paul's talking about here? You know what's interesting? I was reading an old lectureship book last night, and there's a statement in there that just really struck with me. He said, when Jesus came to earth, he did not introduce religion. Religion has always been around. The Egyptians sure. worshiped everything. The Babylonians, even here in Ephesus, they were worshiping. So it wasn't a matter of, here's people have never, ever worshiped. People have never been religious. But what the author said in that lectureship book was Jesus introduced how to worship rightly.
Yeah.
And I like that idea. And so when we think about temple, it wasn't a matter of, okay, you've never heard of this before. They had priests, they had sacrifices, but now the right way of doing that. And so for just kind of a comparison, what would be some differences?
Sure. Idolatry would be one of the huge ones, right? Acts 17 is a great case study of this. It's not the city of Ephesus, but a very comparable city in the ancient world, Athens, right? Also a city just full of temples. And Luke even tells us in Acts chapter 17 that Paul is waiting for his traveling companions to catch up to him in Athens. And his spirit, Paul, of course, was raised as a very devout Jew, a Pharisee among the Jews. His very Jewish-minded spirit was provoked within him as he saw that the city was full of idols. And so that is one of the major challenges in, for instance, the book of Acts, as these Jews who have become Christians are going beyond Judea and Samaria into very pagan saturated territory, where it's just assumed, well, there is a God who makes the sun rise. There is a God that makes the moon change shape throughout the course of the month. There is a God who sends the storms, and a God who rules over the harvest, and a goddess of fertility, and on and on and on it goes. That was the ancient mindset as to how are we going to explain this amazing world in which we live. Paul goes into a city like Ephesus, the city of Athens or the city of Ephesus. And that is challenge number one. We've got to emphasize and prove that there is only one true and living God. I think that's one of the reasons that he would always start in a synagogue, because that was assumed among the Jews. Now, among the Jews, there were other challenges, right? But that was one major difference in the Gentile world. What would you add to that as far as differences between the Jewish and the Gentile temples?
Well, you know, from what Paul is really building there, the temple had the Gentile temple, the Artemis, it was in a specific location. In some ways, the Jewish was too. You would go to the temple, okay?
Right.
And when you were done, you would leave the temple. The temple was there and you were somewhere else. Now what Paul's illustrating is that the people of God, the righteous people, we are the temple.
Right.
So it's not bound to, you know, it's that third and main street. That's where the temple is. It did not have a location. The temple, you know, they were praying to something that was lifeless. The Gentiles were. I mean, they had a statue of their God, but their God couldn't hear. Their God couldn't do anything. They want a bigger temple. They had to pick that God up and carry it with them. We're talking to the living God, the God that makes the sun, the God that does all things, the God that hears our prayers. And so a lot of differences in that. And
yeah, one I think we could add is just the way that worship was engaged in, right? It's interesting from the standpoint of human beings. Gentile worship, generally speaking, was very pleasurable to the self, right? And it doesn't take a whole lot of mental work to start connecting the dots. Well, if you want people to come to this temple you've constructed and support this temple and make it as grand and glorious as possible, you've got to give them a hook, right? You've got to have bait to get them. And so sexual immorality was extremely common. Promises of, if you do this, then good things will happen as a result. And the tragic thing is, we see those same hooks even today. You turn into a televangelist today, you see that. We see self-made, self-gratifying religion all around us. Again, that to the quote earlier, that's not a new phenomenon. This is an ancient, ancient thing. And God, from the very beginning, taught his people in a variety of ways, you are to be unashamedly different. This isn't about pleasing you as much as it is about glorifying me.
And so another major difference is what Paul was writing about is God-focused. It's a God-focused religion rather than here's what I want. And I believe the modern church is following those idolaters because what do you want? And that's what we do. Well, you know, over in the book of 1 Corinthians chapter 6, just for clarification, Paul would say in verse 19, do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit who's in you? Now, what's he mean by that?
Yeah, it's interesting. I wrestled a little with that last week because I knew what was coming and time just didn't allow it. Maybe later on this year we'll get into it. But it's interesting, in the New Testament, the temple is spoken of in two different contexts. Yeah. In this Christian era, there is a very real sense in which we collectively as disciples are the temple. That's the context in Ephesians and in 1 Peter, where together we are joined together, built together, and we together are this dwelling place for God. But in a different sense, like that 1 Corinthians 6 context, the same author will talk about our bodies as individuals being temples of the living God. And many of the same threads are there. There is immorality all around you. You need to be aware of that. You need to consider the the power of your associations and your relationships. Realize that you can't live just like the rest of the world and still be holy to God. What fellowship has idolatry with the one living God? And what accord has light with darkness? And in that sense, our bodies are individual temples. And so that also is such a powerful idea to realize, okay, I'm going to be the one that makes that choice, how I'm going to live. That's the choice that Paul is challenging Christians to make, and to make wisely, that it is not this ancient idea that as long as I've got the right knowledge in my head, it doesn't matter what I do with my body. No, my body belongs to God. I have been bought with a price. I belong to God. And so now I glorify him in my body, just as God's people for millennia have glorified him in temples.
And there's a parallel to that Old Testament temple. There's several examples where kings would go in and offer sacrifice, and they were not priests, and they defiled it, or somebody would be right. unclean. And so that parallel is, as individuals, this is the temple of God. And so we need to keep it pure, pure in mind, pure in heart, and pure in body. And somebody said, well, why should I? Because you are the living temple of God. Right. And through you offer sacrifices. Now, let's build that bridge real quickly. When we talk about sacrifices, we go back to the Old Testament. We think about a lamb and an ox and taken to the priest, and blood was collected. And Book of Romans tells us that we're living sacrifices. So, if we put this in a pot and boil it down, what does that mean? I am a sacrifice to God. What does that mean?
Yeah, two passages that really help me understand that. You mentioned one, Romans 12, 1 and 2, where I'm called not to be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of my mind. And I offer myself as a living sacrifice to God. The other is Hebrews chapter 13, where the sacrifice of Christ is highlighted as ultimately necessary to deal with my sins. But now I am a priest, right? And through Christ, Hebrews 13 tells me, verse 14 or verse 15, through him, then, let us continually offer up a sacrifice of praise to God. That is the fruit of our lips that acknowledge his name. And he goes on to talk about not neglecting to do good, but to share what you have. For such sacrifices are pleasing to God. And so I think of it this way. Jesus' sacrifice is the only sacrifice possible to atone for my sins. There is salvation in no one else. And so I come to God on his terms through Christ. I'm joined with him in baptism and raised to walk in newness of life. But the rest of my life now is about offering sacrifices that are acceptable to God. I do that in corporate worship when we gather together and we sing together, pray together, but I also do that by my manner of life, by, in the language of Hebrews 13, doing good to others, sharing what I have, seeing someone in need and doing what I can. Those are sacrifices that I offer to God. I am alive, but my life has been laid on an altar of sacrifice. And to echo what we said earlier, it's no longer about me. It is now about using what I have to glorify the God who has saved me.
You know, I like how Romans says it. It says to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice. And again, we think about back to the days of Malachi, when the people are offering crippled animals and diseased animals, And likely, you get this animal that has a disease. Well, nobody wants to eat it because you might get sick. You don't want to breed it because you could breed some disease. So this animal has to be put down, and we got to give an animal anyway to God. So let's just give him the leftovers.
Yeah.
And that trickles to us today. I'll fill my schedule till it's just full. And if I got any moments, I might say a prayer here, or I might, if I can squeeze in a little bit of time on Sunday, I might, but it's me first. Well, that's the Malachi days. And we're to make a sacrifice. So it's a sacrifice of my time, sacrifice of my attitude. It's a sacrifice of my choices. I've got to put God first. And so many times people will live by this little motto of, I don't feel like it.
Yeah.
Well, too bad. If you're making a sacrifice, you put it forth, and that's what you have to do. And I think that keeps us before us as we think about this idea of a holy temple. He didn't just build a temple, he built a holy temple. And that helps us with some of those things along that line. Still got time, right?
Yes, yeah, we're good.
Okay, let's transition. Let's transition.
Okay.
We talked about this just a little bit while back. Let's talk about the nucleus of writing a sermon.
Okay.
Hopefully, a lot of our listeners out there, maybe some who give Wednesday night invitations and maybe preach on occasion, and you've been preaching for a long, long time. How do you come up with a holy temple sermon?
You just off the cuff on Sunday night, toward the beginning of your sermon, mentioned that you and I have not really talked about this before, and ever since then, even on the drive home that night, I was thinking, well, how do I do that? You mentioned, it's I've been doing that for a long time, and you have too. And sometimes when you've done something so long, you just do it without really thinking about it. And so I've been thinking about how that gets started in my own life. And what I came up with, at least as far as the seeds of it, for me, it comes from studying three things. And I put them in a specific order for a reason. I jotted down, I studied the Bible. And then number two, I studied the church family. And then number three, I studied the times. There are some people who study the times as number one, and they are just always reacting to whatever is going on around them. And I definitely think that there is a time and a place to mention what's going on around us and even to address it. Jesus himself in Luke 13 referenced a couple of current events that were going on in Jerusalem, a tower that had fallen and a calamity in the temple with Jews and Roman soldiers. And so I definitely think we need to be aware. But preaching, as I understand it, is about much more than just being like a pinball and bouncing off of whatever's going on in the world around me. And it's also even more than just studying the church family. Now, I put that number two because effective communication always takes into account who you are talking to. And you and I have talked a lot about that we could get up and preach a sermon that would be imminently relevant in 1950. But if what our audience is grappling with is not lined up with, that sermon that was written in 1950, we're doing our people a disservice. And so I put number one, study the scriptures. And some of the best advice that I ever got was to always make sure that I am reading the Bible for my own personal development and my own personal study. There have been times in my life and times in your life, I'm sure, where it's really easy just to study the Bible in preparation for the next sermon or the next class. And that wears on you for a while. And so the best material, at least in my mind, that I ever come up with often comes from my own personal study, number one. Number two, what's going on in the life of our church family? What do we need? What are we faced with right now? Where are the challenges? And then number three, studying the times around me. Now, that's awfully conceptual. Why don't you take us a practical step forward? What would you add?
You know, all that I agree 110%. I mean, that's the same way I think. I think that's a lot of ways why you and I work together so well. You know, the idea or the genesis of a sermon comes from a lot of places. I mean, I've gotten an idea just seeing a bumper sticker on a car. I think, oh, look at that thought. Yeah. That's a great thought. Reading a book somewhere, a song, a comment somebody makes to you, a question somebody has. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts. And what you're doing is you think, okay, here's a concern, here's a need. And then you start, you know, to me, it's like grandma's vegetable soup. You start building it.
Yeah.
You got to have a foundation. You got to put some meat in there. You got to put some potatoes in there. And you got to let that thing simmer a while. And I mean, you know, I've had somebody tell me, as long as I've been preaching, I can probably sit down and write a sermon in 10 minutes. I said, well, it won't be worth much because
that's exactly right.
It takes all week to write. To me, it takes all week to write a sermon. It really does. And you get the idea. And there's a reason you're going to preach this sermon. Okay. Right now, you know, again, to what you said, we're not pinball. We're not following what's going on. We're leading. And so we're directing this congregation and those that listen to us in this concept of rising and building. So that's what we're doing this year, where we're layering that and talking about different areas we build and some concepts with that. And so from that idea, then you find, okay, here's some passages that deal with that. Got to do your homework. Okay. Got to look at words, got to look at several verses and, you know, write a whole bunch. And what you take to the pulpit, you know, at least for me, maybe 3 pages after I've written 20 pages.
Yeah.
You know, you got to narrow it down and you got to make it practical. You got to make it understandable. You know, I love that Nehemiah where they stood before the people, explained it and gave sense to the understanding. That's what we have to do. And so, you know, there's no shortcuts. There's no quick, you know, somebody says, well, I want to do what you're doing. I love it. Jump in because we need more preachers. But there's just, as anybody does anything, there's an art to it and you got to work at it and there takes time. And so a lot of reading, a lot of thinking. And so sometimes, you know, I get some parts of the sermon going and then I'll go off and do something else. But that sermon's in that head and it's just rolling right around. I'm thinking about it. What's the best way to word it? What's the best way to approach it? What order should I put these points in? And just, you know, that's just part of it. And, you know, sometimes I wonder if I'm ever going to get this right, but it's just what we do.
It is. I'll add one more. I mean, we could talk for a month about this whole process, but something that I neglected for far too long. You know, it's one thing to come up with the idea and do the study and the work of fleshing it out and arranging it and purging it and everything. But for a very long time, I left out, I feel like, the last important step. And that's really praying about it before I deliver it. And I would encourage anyone from a Bible class teacher, someone about to give an invitation, begin and end that process by prayer.
Absolutely.
You cannot improve on that. If you are using God's word and trying to serve as a modern mouthpiece to give this voice, it is not a good thing to try and do that without seeking the face and the help of God in prayer. And so I always try and remember that as my final step in preparation, praying about what's going to happen.
And I always say just a real short prayer before I get up and actually speak every time. Mm-hmm. I just pray, Lord, help me to be the best I can today. Not the best preacher. That's vain. Not my best ever, but just the best I can be today. And there's been some circumstances that life's been hard. I remember preaching one time on the road. I had such a bad headache. I actually threw up right before I was supposed to preach. I kept thinking, I just don't, you know, and I was a guest preacher. I thought, you know, I can't throw in the towel here. So I just said that little prayer and I got behind that pulpit and I just banged it. I hit it good. And that prayer has helped me so many times. Just help me be the best I can today. And
it's really helpful.
And I think that prayer really could be prayed about our life in general. You know, don't help me be the best Christian in the world because that's vain, but just help me be the best I can be today. And yeah. Get you through today, and then we'll worry about tomorrow. So,
well said. Well, I have enjoyed this conversation. We're usually face to face, and we weren't able to today, but I've enjoyed it, and I hope that it's helpful to our listeners. It's Wednesday. We are looking forward to being able to gather together this evening at 7 o'clock. We're going to continue this whole process of rise and build practical lessons and reflections from the Joseph story. And Lord willing, this evening at 7 o'clock p.m., we'll talk about when you're criticized. We hear Joseph at the end and the beginning of his documented life in Genesis being criticized by some of the people closest to himself. We know what it is to be criticized. Sometimes it's deserved, sometimes it's not. And so as disciples of Jesus, what should we do when we're criticized? That's where we'll be this evening at 7 o'clock p.m. We'll be in person and also live streaming at charlestownroad.org. Roger, you're scheduled to be preaching this Sunday morning. What do you have lined up for us?
We started a series last Sunday night talking about being on the same page with God. And so we're going to do part two this coming Sunday morning as we talk a little bit about the area of salvation and being on the same page with God. Love to have you at 9:30 and bring your mask and come with us. And we'd love for you to be there.
Absolutely. Roger, thanks for joining me today, despite the challenges, and thanks to all of you for listening to This Week at Charlestown Road. We appreciate you and your ongoing encouragement. We're looking forward to these upcoming opportunities, especially Sunday, the best day of the week, and we would love to have you come and grow with us.